that January session was very, very comprehensive, and what I wanted to do there was to cover every possible aspect, the child aspect, how agencies could deal with it, the parallels within the First Nations community, the parallels in the kind of organized torture and abuse that had taken place in residential schools, the impact and the acceleration of False Memory Syndrome Foundation, the evidence and the research documentation about Masonic ritual abuse, which is a big problem in this community, as in many others throughout North America, Britain, Australia. And then to have the community panel, we're really fortunate to have some extraordinarily committed and very, very perceptive and bright professionals working in the community here in Thunder Bay. There are people working here who I guess people are surprised when they realize the level of research and the level of service that's actually occurring in this very isolated region in Thunder Bay. And then the third and final section of Making Up for Lost Time was a workshop by Alexandra Rogers, who is also a survivor and therapist based in the States. Alexandra was raised in a Masonic military cult in the state of Maine, and she was a programmer and trained to be a programmer throughout her childhood. I think that particular conference workshop setting, to have a survivor who had managed to break the programming and escape from the cult, and who is now able to professionally work with survivors and therapists, to break the code for them on how to deal with certain programs that had been implemented in clients, and also for survivors to be able to listen to this extraordinary woman who had been through all of the same practices, tortures, and abuses, and who had actually been a torturer herself. For her to stand up there and talk about the kind of intervention that brought her out over on the side of being a survivor and not a participant or a practitioner anymore, it was one of the most powerful things that happened throughout the entire duration of the three-part conference series. And Alexandra is 33 years old. Her husband was also there. He's an artist who is also a cult survivor who was raised in Toronto, and he had formerly been involved in animation production. This was a really interesting time in Ontario's history. While unbeknownst to us, there were five other communities in the province who were also hosting conferences or workshops or gatherings specifically about ritual abuse. One took place in Kitchener in February of 95, one in Ottawa, February of 95, one in Belleville, February 95, another in Ottawa in March 95, and one in Kingston in June 95. So from our first gathering in November, our second in January, and our third in June, in that essentially 6 to 8 month period, there were 8 or 9 gatherings happening around the province. So what we were doing wasn't happening in isolation. We're not a curiosity of a community. What we were doing was part of a much larger breaking the silence throughout the province of Ontario.
Do you know if any of the other conferences made the links between ritual abuse and mind control experimentation?
No, nor did they talk about Masonic ritual abuse. I think I sensed at the time that if we were going to present this information, and if people were going to go to all the trouble to get to Thunder Bay from other parts of the province or from other provinces, that it was essential that we encapsulize the information and that we put the whole notion of ritual abuse into a much broader historical context. I know some of the other groups were very fearful of bringing that kind of information forward. We certainly brought the Masonic information forward, and we paid for that in lots of ways. The mind control experimentation wasn't addressed directly at that time. There were private conversations about it that went on at the gathering, and actually I think the extent of the mind control experimentation that had occurred or coming to know about it was a byproduct of advertising, particularly about the Masonic connection, because I put a few small advertisements in the Globe and Mail, notifications about the upcoming conferences, and just the three or four words describing the Masonic connection generated phone calls and letters from survivors across Canada who described themselves as being Masonic survivors living in terror. And they were invariably the daughters of Masons or Scottish Rite Shriners, the daughters of Masons. And they began describing, again from all across Canada, memories of what could only be described as mind control experimentation. So those fragments began to come forward back then in November 94.
Now, there was some public statements about the Masonic involvement in ritual abuse in the media at the time of the conference, or shortly after, which they had a chance to respond, and they denied all the allegations that were being brought forth. Has there been further responses from the Masonic Lodge since the conference, and what or any further communication?
There was a really well organized, what I can only call it, an attack by the Masons when the January portion of the conference was coming to the media's attention. And I'm going to speak about Thunder Bay because there was a great deal of media coverage here in the city about it. There was a fax campaign where the then Premier Bob Rae received faxes from Masons all over the province denouncing what the Stone Angels were doing in Thunder Bay. I had messages left on my answering machine at that point day after day, from Masons and wives of Masons in northwestern Ontario, including a call from the wife of a Mason up in Moose Factory and also the publisher of a newspaper in Dryden who refused to print the notice about the conference itself because her husband was a Mason. So she chose as publisher and editor of the regional newspaper to not let people in that part of northwestern Ontario that there was such a gathering. And there was a big public outcry by the Masons that they were not allowed to come and attend our conference. And we were very explicit and very clear about Masons not being allowed to attend. Registration was closed to survivors and therapists and service providers. That's who it was designed for. And I received a series of calls from two particular Masons over a period of time here in Thunder Bay. One of them was a retired policeman, Peter Toohey, who also went on television denouncing what we were doing. And at that point, I was fairly naive. I didn't have access at that time to all of the information that was available throughout primarily U.S. publications, who had also been asking questions about the Masons. So I was operating in a bit of an information vacuum at the time. And I had come across some information stating that the Scottish Rite in the United States funded, out of their charitable donations, research on schizophrenia. I can remember reading that and thinking how curious and how chilling that the upper echelon within the Masonic secret society would choose to use their charitable monies to fund research on schizophrenia, which is very similar in some ways to the multiple personality disorder or the dissociative identity disorder, which is displayed by 99% of survivors of ritual abuse and certainly of mind control experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I very naively asked Mr. Tui if he was aware that monies were being used for these purposes, and he very proudly told me that, well, yes, and here in Thunder Bay, all the money that the Shriners raised went to fund a research project on the study of schizophrenia at University of British Columbia. I found that very frightening and very chilling, that the money from this community in Northwestern Ontario, raised by this male secret society, would be directly funneled to a university on the West Coast. And then I came across another piece of information on a bulletin board out at the university shortly after that. There's research grants available at York University, something called the Roar Institute, which is funded by the Masonic Foundation of Canada, offers $8,000 and $35,000 research grants. The $35,000 research grant at York University is directly funded by the Scottish Rite Charitable Foundation of Canada through the Roar Institute for the purpose of offering research grants for studies in the area of intellectual disability. I don't think this is something that is broadly known either, and I'm wondering what kind of studies are actually being carried out at York University with these monies.
Interesting.
Because I think I've mentioned to you before, in terms of intellectual disability, all of the survivors who I have come in contact with are extremely bright, very, very creative men and women. Some of them have 2 degrees. A lot of them have postgraduate accreditation as well. And yet the survivors who were able to function on any professional or academic level, who are indeed even able to support themselves, are in the minority. And what was done to us has been disabling intellectually to the extreme.
I'd like to talk about HMC, which you are the Canadian coordinator for. How did this organization come about, and what are your goals and demands and activities?
HMC is the Advocacy Committee for Human Experimentation Survivors of Mind Control. And in March 1995, the testimony was accepted at the President's Advisory Committee on Human Radiation Experiments in Washington, the testimony of approximately 50 survivors of child mind control experimentation funded by the CIA. Was presented to that commission by Valerie Wolf, a therapist in New Orleans. And Valerie, incidentally, grew up on the military base in North Bay, and she and her husband both completed undergraduate work at McMaster University in Hamilton. Valerie now has been for quite a while a therapist in New Orleans, and her husband is a psychiatrist on faculty at Tulane University in New Orleans. Valerie collected the written testimony of survivors of childhood mind control experimentation to bring to the committee's attention, and two of her clients, Claudia Mullen and Chris Ebert, came in person to give oral testimony about their experiences as children who had been subjected to torture, mind control, experimentation and procedures, and also the organized pedophilia, again within the CIA context. And I was able to attend a conference in Texas last year, I was able to attend a conference in April of 1996. Valerie, Claudia, and Chris were presenters at the conference, and when they described the next thing that had to happen for survivors was the formation of a survivor-based advocacy committee who would collect information from as many survivors as possible and bring it to the attention of this advisory committee so that another presidential advisory committee and a formal commission could be formed to accept the testimony of the mind control survivors in the United States and in Canada. I met other survivors there, and we began sharing experiences and began informally talking about forming such a group. And then, following that, there was correspondence in writing by telephone and, of course, some by internet access. And on the last day of that conference, I by chance started talking to Blanche Shabusti, who is also a survivor. She's an adult survivor of mind control experimentation, originally from Upper State, New York. And she and I just happened to sit down and talk to each other and decided that we were going to do whatever was necessary to form this Survivors Advocacy Committee. And when each of us returned home, Blanche Long Island and me to Thunder Bay, we began contacting all of the survivors that we had been able to connect with over internet and through the mail and by telephone contact. And we were able to start AXMC. And one of the first actions that we did was five survivors attended a conference at the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. in May of last year, and they handed out the first information about AXMC at that time. And we started a database. We formally started doing that in October. We have a website now, and questionnaires have been sent out to over 100 survivors of child mind control experimentation. And we receive requests for information and for the questionnaires themselves by our website, which was again established just last October. So we have begun collecting this information, and we're creating this database, and we hope to be able to produce a report. That data shows the geographic clusters where experimentation has taken place in the United States and in Canada, and it also shows the clusters of alleged perpetrators, torturers, the doctors who carried out these experiments.
Now, I understand you've also been very active in working with the Native American Indian communities in Thunder Bay area. What has your involvement been, and how has traditional Native healing practices played a part in your recovery and other survivors' recoveries?
When I spoke earlier about coming in contact with over 60 adult survivors of ritual abuse in Thunder Bay, some of those adult survivors are Ojibwe people who were raised in Thunder Bay or on reserves in northwestern Ontario, we began to see similarities in what survivors of residential schools were describing in terms of the practices that were carried out on them. For instance, the electric chair that was constructed at the residential school in Fort Albany. And there were also statements about the skeletons of children found in an abandoned barn there at Fort Albany. Some of the ex-residential school students described having been raped in the middle of the night by men dressed in white robes, and then forced abortions taking place. These are the same ritual cult practices described by survivors of cult abuse, cult experience.
You are listening to the International Connection on CKLN 88.1, and that was an interview with Lynn Moss Sharman, a U.S. government mind control experiment survivor and coordinator for the Advocacy Committee for Human Experimentation Survivors of Mind Control. We're going to hear a music piece right now by Joan Baez called Play Me Backwards. And if you listen closely to the lyrics, this song is about child ritual abuse. You're listening to CKLN.
You don't have to play me backwards to get the meaning of my verse. You don't have to die and go to hell to feel the devil's curse. Well, I thought my life was a photograph on the family Christmas card. Kids all dressed in buttons and bows and lined up in the yard.
Oh,
That was part one of an interview with Lynn Moss Sharman, the coordinator of the Advocacy Committee for Human Experimentation Survivors of Mind Control, and also of the Stone Angels group in Thunder Bay. Next week, we will continue this interview and talk more about AICS-MC's current campaign to call for government investigation into mind control experiments on children. You can learn more about AICS-MC through their website, which is www.aiches-mc.org. I would like to make a couple of announcements about upcoming conference regarding these issues we're dealing with on this show. From October 1st to 3rd in Atlanta, Georgia, there will be a conference called Ritual Trauma, Child Abuse, and Mind Control, a Growing Threat to National Security. And this is organized by Eclipse. Eclipse is Emancipating Children from Legal Injustice, Pornography, and Sexual Exploitation. And it's going to feature quite an impressive list of speakers, including Walter Bowart, author of Operation Mind Control, Charles Whitfield, author of Trauma and Abuse, Ted Gunderson, a former FBI agent who investigated the McMartin case, Dr. Nicholas Begich, author of Angels Don't Play This Harp, Bryce Taylor, a former presidential mind control slave and author of Starshine, One Woman's Valiant Escape from Mind Control, Ann Earle, a therapist who has specialized in the treatment of abuse, trauma, and dissociative disorders, among many other speakers in Atlanta, Georgia, and that's, again, October 1st to 3rd. You can call 864-592-9326 for more information. Also, another gathering, more survivor-oriented healing gathering in Elliott Lake, Ontario, from October 3rd to 5th. And this is organized by survivors of spiritual and sexual abuse. And there will be survivor panels covering topics on institutionalized child abuse, incest, ritual abuse and cults, sexual abuse by the religious clergy. And there will be an opportunity to participate in holistic healing and ceremonies by Anishinaabe elders. And that is taking place again in Elliott Lake, Ontario, from October 3rd to 5th. And for more information, you can contact SOSSA at P.O. Box 147, Serpent River First Nation in Cutler, Ontario. And the postal code is P0P1P0. You can get transcripts of previous shows on this Mind Control radio series here on the International Connection at the website www.mk.net/tildemcf. That's the Mind Control Forum's website, and look under the CKLN radio series title. You're listening to CKLN 88.1, and we're just out of time. Coming up next is Aquí Nuestra America. Stay tuned.